Hey guys, it's Sam
and Rachel,
and you're listening to the Blind Life Podcast.
This is the companion podcast to the popular YouTube channel, The Blind Life.
The goal of The Blind Life is to help you live your best blind life. Hey everybody, it's Sam with The Blind Life. Welcome back to another Working Blind episode. Today we've got a good one. I am joined by one half of the two blind brothers.
The best half.
The one blind brother, Brad Manning of Two Blind Brothers. Thanks, Brad. I appreciate it, man.
Excited to be here, especially without my younger brother. So thanks so much for doing this.
He does seem to be MIA. Something about a baby.
Yeah, he's so selfish, just taking care of his newborn
daughter.
Doesn't
he know this is important? He's supposed to be here.
We will angrily drunken text him later. No, just kidding.
We'll put his address in the show notes.
He's going to be doxxed.
But no, I appreciate at least half of the team showed up. This is the Working Blind series where I talk to people in the community who are working, successfully working, just to hopefully inspire those out there who are thinking about what kind of jobs can a blind person do. Mm-hmm. And so you guys have been very successful in what you do, and we're going to get to that in a second. But first, share with everybody your vision impairment. What's your condition?
Sure. So, like you, I have Stargardt's disease. I was diagnosed at age 7, failed the kindergarten eye chart at age 5, took a while to get diagnosed. I think my vision acuity today is somewhere around 2400. Mm-hmm. Basically, people describe Stargardt's in different ways. Center vision is bad, so things like driving, reading small texts, and recognizing faces are all tough or impossible. But navigating a room and looking like you're not blind
it's doable.
Until you look at your phone or something, that's also part of the game.
Yeah. I'm curious, are you 2400 in both eyes? Is it about the same?
About the same, yeah.
Oh, you're one of those rare unicorns that have. my good eye is 2400. My bad eye is about 2800.
Got it. I've heard that after like 2100, 2200, it's so, like, the nuances are so fragile. You can jump, even though it seems like it's a lot. It's hard to actually distinguish beyond a certain point.
And it's tough because, especially the longer you live with it, the one eye, the dominant eye, kind of does the heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. So you were 7. You were young, much younger than me. I was 11. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of on the younger age of, from what I mm-hmm. know from Stargardt's being diagnosed.
Yeah,
overachiever, right?
Yeah, what can I say? If you ain't first, you're last. No, it's interesting because I always was kind of excited about the amount of vision I actually had. I was like, for being called blind, I can see a lot of stuff, but it was interesting. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, we saw Dr. Tsang. He's a big Stargardt's doctor in New York City. And he actually told us that we have one of the middle of the road to potentially more. He said there's three categories. And he said our particular mutation is associated with sort of a moderate to a middle of the road to more serious case, which I was really surprised to hear. When I meet people with Stargardt's, I find that we're in the middle a lot. There's some people who have it have a lot more vision. Some people have it worse, and we're sort of in the middle. But because I was diagnosed so early, I was actually afraid I was going to have a more aggressive case.
Yeah, yeah. Is that based on like how large your scotoma is? They judge the severity of it?
I think, there's like the literal, what this doctor was trying to do was to forecast the progression of the disease. Mm-hmm. So of course he could measure vision acuity and say, this is where you are today. But he was saying genetically, this tends to, be associated with, either a more severe case or a more mild case.
Yeah.
I don't know that science and those categories that well. I just recall that anecdote from that conversation with him.
Tell everybody what you do for a living.
So, well, I do a couple things, but what I'm here for is my brother and I, 7 years ago, came up with this idea for a charitable clothing brand. My brother also has Stargardt's disease. We were sort of inspired by a lot of the great innovation happening in biotech and medicine for these conditions. In particular, there was a kid named Yannick Douay, who was one of the first early gene therapy patients for a therapy that became Luxturna that treats LCA. And we were shopping in New York City. We had all these friends that worked in fashion, you know, and we thought, you know, one of the things that the we've always been close to the Foundation Fighting Blindness, which funds preclinical research for eye disease. And one of the things that's tough when you're fundraising for research is you know, $10 of a donation doesn't mean $10 of cure or therapy. It's not like somebody's hungry, so you buy them a meal, you know? And so health research fundraising struggles from, how do I make this tangible? And so it just inspired us to start what we thought at the time was a side project of, you know, we'll have two, you know, we'll produce some clothing here in New York City, we'll sell it at some Foundation Fighting Blindness events. And that's how we came up with this brand, Two Blind Brothers, and we've been running it now for 7 years. It's an e-commerce clothing brand.
Yeah, and very popular all over the place. We were just talking about social media, and I see you guys all over. I see people talking about, you know, I'm opening my Shop Blind box from Two Blind Brothers. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Like, you can relate to this because we now live in a world where you can take what might seem like a small story that other people won't connect to, but you put it on the internet for a global or at least a national audience to potentially find. And, you know, you find your community. And I think we are the great beneficiaries of this great age that we live in where, you know, people can discover, you know, two guys who are trying to help this cause. And you know, we've had a lot of fun with the marketing on social media. I think that's one of the really, that's something that's what helped us really early. We were lucky, we got some good traction on our story. We sort of repurposed that and worked on that for big pushes into like organic, but a lot of paid media and social. And it was a very efficient time to advertise on social media. So that really helped with the project as well.
Yeah, yeah, it kind of blew up. And speaking of that, you guys were on Ellen. That's something that we should mention.
You know, with Two Blind Brothers, when you're a consumer brand, you know, you're sort of out there facing the public. I mean, even, you know, we don't sell specifically to retinal eye disease customers. We try to sell to a mass consumer audience that cares about social impact. Maybe a lot of those people incidentally have a lot of feelings towards, you know, vision related issues. But we ended up getting these opportunities in earned media, they call it, like, you know, traditional media. Ellen DeGeneres probably being the biggest one very early in the project. And that is actually was the springboard, because up until that point, we were just like, yeah, we'll work on this a little bit at night. We'll work on the weekends. Before that, we did a small Fox 5 news interview in New York. Neither of us had ever been on camera before, you know? So that moment, for a variety of reasons, was a big launching point for this whole project, for sure.
I'm sure, yeah. And I've been to your office. I've seen the check. Is the check still hanging on the wall?
That's right, yeah. She gave us $35,000.
Yeah.
And it was a really interesting moment to know that you were going on national television on the largest daytime talk show to tell everybody that you were two blind brothers. For everyone in your family, potential in-laws and dating partners and future people in business, you know, you are going to be Googled forever as the blind guy. Yeah, I was coming out as the blind guy, you know? And up until then, you know, with Stargardt's disease, sometimes you can be kind of covert with it.
Right.
So that was a big moment. The other thing that that happened is we felt a tremendous sense of responsibility, because you can't even buy your way into some of that publicity. And so we thought, shit, we've been doing this like 6 months and somebody handed us this crazy tailwind. Shame on us if we don't do everything we can with this, because in life you don't get those chances, and there's so many deserving people, you know? And so it was, we felt a sense of responsibility from it.
A lot of pressure, I'm sure.
Self-imposed, but yes, yes, yeah.
Well, so, and of course, Brian's not here, but we're gonna lump him into all of this as well. So to do this, I love the fact that you guys thought this was just gonna be a fun little project that you're gonna do on weekends, and it's turned into what it is. What kind of training or education did you need prior to getting into this?
Mm-hmm.
Brian as well.
Yeah, so to be honest, we had no background, and what we had was a great desire and a great passion and a willingness to fumble along for a little while. I think what I've learned now about brand is actually you need to start with fantastic product, then you need infrastructure, and then you need sizzle. So we did it the opposite direction. You know, we got all this media early on while we were still producing shirts that we just thought we liked to wear, you know, not considering, you know, customer demographics and like customer, you know, what's sellable at what price point, all the business stuff and products expertise. But we like, you might relate to, you know, sometimes you find something you're willing to do regardless of, you know, what it's, whether it's going to be successful or not, you know, and we would have been thrilled just to have this fun project between us. And it just so happened to, you know, connect in whatever way it has.
Well, and I know from our previous discussions on it, you guys were fortunate enough to have some people in your lives that were experts on some of these things, right? And and so you were able to kind of lean on them for their expertise.
Yep. So, you know, being in New York City, we had folks that worked in fashion, you know, especially also after some of the media, a lot of people reached out and offered to help, you know.
coming out of the woodworks. But, I saw you on Ellen.
but in a total, like, you know, there was a guy, Greg, who is the CFO of Dallas Lighthouse for the Blind, and he was like, why don't we work out a deal where we can produce all your clothing? I was like, I didn't even know that organizations like this existed, an organization of blind workers that had a cut and sew facility. And, you know, and we benefited from people willing to probably give us some favorable treatment because of the charitable nature of the project. And, you know, and so that, you know, and just friends who were willing to help us cover some of our, you know, lack of expertise for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you guys have been doing this for a while now, 7 years, you said. What kind of accommodations do you use in order to do your job that you require because of your vision impairment?
So we're in a very unique situation with two blind brothers in that, you know, we can organize the work in a way that suits our vision impairment. Whereas if you're, you know, an employee somewhere, you don't, and I've worked other places before, you don't necessarily have that flexibility. So we have, you know, we have a small team, like 6-person team. And so anything visual, they have perfect eyesight. You know, they help us with that. Personally, what I, my accommodations, the things I use are pretty simple. I have an iPhone and I have a MacBook. On my MacBook, I have a hotkey Zoom. I have select text, hotkey text to speech. And on my iPhone, I have a 3-finger double tap to zoom in, some text to speech. You know, play with voiceover here and there, you know, actually curious to see if I could actually work without any eyes on my phone. I thought that'd be like an interesting goal. It's almost like if you learn how to do it, then maybe it's actually faster than how I work. I just haven't done that yet. But, you know, between those two products, I mean, and actually one that I think doesn't get mentioned a lot, Alexa. I use Alexa all...
I expect her to make the noise.
Yeah, I know. Is there one in this room?
Yeah.
Alexa is incredible for calendar creation. Alexa, tomorrow at 5 p.m., you know, get drunk with Sam. And anything that gets my eyes off the phone is great. And, you know, that's Alexa integrations are actually one that I use more than I think I see other people mentioning.
Yeah, not a lot of people do, but like when I'm working with seniors, I talk about the benefit of Alexa a lot. But now that I think about it, I do a ton of Zoom call appointments almost every day, and I'm like, Alexa, set an alarm for 12:45 because I got to get ready for my 1 o'clock call.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll have like three or four of those in a day, just because if I don't, I will just forget about it and
totally
miss the call.
Flash briefings for news, you know. Actually, I think it also can call Ubers too.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't done that recently, but yeah, I sometimes I'll carry one of the Alexa, one of the wall plugs, you know, the cheapest one, you know, just for those things. Yeah.
I imagine you guys are in Manhattan, so transportation. I like to talk about transportation as an accommodation for some people.
Mm-hmm.
You guys probably use, you know, public transportation and stuff, and a lot of the things you have to, places you have to go are probably within walking distance for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I was always told, and I luckily it lined up with personally what I enjoy too, you know. Big cities are nice,
mm-hmm.
For that reason. You know, where I grew up, up until recently, you couldn't even like get a car to come like pick you up. You know, so
yeah,
this levels the playing field on transportation being in a city.
Yeah, I work with a lot of people. I'm in Kentucky, and I live in a very accessible city, but a lot of the people I work with are rural,
mm-hmm.
and it's tough, man. That's one of the biggest obstacles for people is transportation.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have a pretty good team, it sounds like, and since your brand is all about vision impairment, you probably don't run into it too much, but I always want to ask, do you ever experience any negative encounters or issues with people you work with, people you interact with, based on your vision impairment?
You know, the answer is yes, not so much with the immediate team, you know, that knows us well. In
right.
fact, zero with the immediate team.
Yeah, yeah.
But look, I think as a consumer brand that's doing ads all the time and getting out in front of people, I mean, we get ridiculous messages all the time, you know, about how, you know, maybe the great Lord has smitten our eyes for some great infidelity or
yeah.
some miracle pineapple juice cure that cures eyesight, or, you know, or like you get this all the time, you know, blindness is a spectrum,
mm-hmm.
you know, someone sees somebody who can like calls themselves blind but sees something, you know,
yeah.
there's a little bit of that. Less of that than I actually expected originally. That's with two blind brothers. And then being out in the world and having people, you know, have an issue with the eyes, I just feel like after 30 years, that was like a big issue maybe when I was young. But somehow you learn the just natural jujitsu around those things as you get older, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you kind of, you learn how to either shrug it off, mention something in a way, or, you know, sometimes it's intentional, you know, it's like, you know, I'm a big believer in like, look, if something's so inaccessible, you can put it on other people. Like an example would be like, I'm standing in an airport going through customs. I can't see what line I'm supposed to go in, or like, and I've got my customs form I can't like figure out. I'll just walk up to the whatever line I want with the form. And then eventually somebody would be like, what are you doing? I was like, oh, sorry, I couldn't see it. I just got this blank form, and yeah, I guess I'm in the line to like, and they're like, let me do this for you,
yeah,
you know, and go
yeah,
through,
yeah.
you know, and I find like that's almost easier sometimes than spending 45 minutes to be in the same situation, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, I talk about that all the time, that, you know, obviously we want to be as independent as possible, but at the same time, sometimes it's just easier to ask for the help. It's quicker, you know, traveling through airports. I always ask, mm-hmm. take me to my gate. I can't read the signs, you know, and it's like, I could probably figure it out. I could use my technology and find it on my own, but it would be, you know, difficult, frustrating, anxiety inducing and all of that. And it's just so much easier to just ask.
Do you find too that like sometimes people love to be empowered to help sometimes? I mean, sometimes not, you know, but sometimes you can look at somebody and say, you know, I can't see that well. I'm just trying to figure out how to do X, Y, Z. And you know, I've met these people that are like, I will do it for you, you know? And they're excited to be able to be valuable actually in a way. Like you're, you know, somebody told me this quote one time, like this guy was in line and he was painting, so he looked terrible. And the person behind him offered to pay for his groceries because they thought he was struggling.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, it wasn't really that much food, and don't refuse somebody their blessing. Yeah. You know, they want to feel good. You know, yeah, that's okay. You know, so.
Yeah, yeah. I like I said before, I work with seniors a lot, and the comment I hear all the time is, I don't want to be a burden. I don't want to be a burden on my family, on my friends. And I tell them, I said, humans, we are naturally, if you're a good person, you're naturally want to help. You know, yeah. And I said, turn it around. If they needed help from you, would you consider them being a burden? No, not at all. Because we as humans, we want to help. And so we should never be afraid to ask for that.
You know, a perfect example with my wife, we go out to dinner. She signs the tip and and signs all the checks. I mean, she kind of likes it. You know, she just, there's something about getting I hand the card. She gets the check. She looks at it. She signs. I think she just likes that that's a unique little routine that she and I have, you know? I mean, however small that is, she, you know, people like to be needed. People need to be needed, actually.
Yeah. Well, we're about to go out to eat, and we'll see if Peter likes signing checks.
200% tip.
All right, Brad, well, I appreciate it, man. So wrap it up, not to put you on the spot, but if somebody was considering, you know, they want to get out there, they want to work, and they're not sure what they can do. Is there any words of encouragement or advice you can give them? Call you? You guys are hiring?
Yeah, we'll just send you the check. Don't even worry about work. No, just kidding. Don't do that. Look, no shame, okay? Mm-hmm. The first thing somebody needs to learn with vision impairment, how to operate without shame. People think they're not pursuing jobs or not getting jobs because they're not hitting the gas full steam because they're self-firing themselves before they even get to the job. So make sure that there isn't one part of you that's embarrassed about your eyesight, even if it's faking it, you know, in the beginning of the process. Like, you cannot, if you think that you're weak or less than, that's going to subcommunicate to the job you're applying for. You have to convince yourself that you are a great addition, you know, to this company for all the other benefits you have. We all have weaknesses. Just because you're of an eyesight thing doesn't make you any worse than the next person, assuming you have the accommodation. So no shame. And then, we live in a world with great technology. We live in a world with increasing remote work for people with transportation issues. It's like, just, you know, it's not fair, but you have to be probably more willing to try and fail. And, you know, and maybe there's lessons you'll learn in that others wouldn't learn. And maybe there's a silver lining there.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that, especially, you know, knowing your own worth, know what you bring to the table, and even if you're doubting it, don't show it.
Yeah.
Fake it.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, Brad, well, I appreciate it. So what's the best way people can get a hold of you guys, reach out, the website?
TwoBlindBrothers.com, T-W-O, B-L-I-N-D. They should know that.
Yeah, I think they figured it out. B-R-O-S. VRT.com.
VRT. Not like Super Mario Bros. Yeah. But we should make sure we get that domain. I don't think we have that. No,
we should, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, on social media, it's at Two Blind Brothers. So
perfect.
But yeah, thanks so much, Sam. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Yeah. All right, guys, thank you so much for watching. This is Working Blind. If you like this and you want to see more, check out the playlist down below. If you're listening to the podcast, I will include in the show notes more information about how you can listen to some more episodes. But thanks everybody for watching and listening. Sam with the Blind Life and Brad. We will see you next time. Hey.